Well, thank you, Pekka, for this introduction. Now, from there, I can only go down. I will try my best not to. So this is my first time in Toronto, actually, in the University of Toronto and in Toronto, although I have been many times changing airplanes here. So today I will try to tell you a little bit of what we know at the moment about this new discovery, not so new, already 4 years old, of the Higgs. And I will try to connect it a little bit, first of all what we are still expecting to learn about this new particle that maybe some of you have heard about it, like the God particle. We theoretical physicists don't like to call it that way, but if that's the way that people remember it, no publicity is bad publicity. So I will try to tell you a bit about the Higgs portal and so the connection of the Higgs with other interesting questions that we have, for example, understanding the dark matter of the universe, and maybe even thinking about the possibility of having extra dimensions of space. So as I said, the Higgs boson was discovered at the Large Hadron Collider in Geneva, Switzerland, especially for the US on the 4th of July of 2012. I don't know if that was a sarcasm or whatever, but okay. So this is the ATLAS experiment, one of the two big experiments, and this is a picture of a Higgs particle that is decaying into two muons and two electrons. So this is the discovery of a new type of particle that we have never seen before. And there is a discovery of a new type of force besides the ones that we already know. And it certainly is a new era for particle physics and for cosmology. So the first question you probably ask yourself is, okay, so why is the Higgs so important? Why should I care, right? What's interesting? Well, in particle physics, we try to describe the subatomic world, and these are the subatomic particles of what we call the standard model of particle physics. These particles are quarks and leptons. These are all fermions, and these are the bosons that are the force carriers of the three forces that are described by the standard model of particle physics, that is the strong interactions, SU2, the electroweak interactions that are modeled by an SU2 cross U1 symmetry group. And so the force carriers are the photon, that is the force carrier of light, as we know, the W and the Z, that are the electroweak bosons, and the gluons, that are eight of them, and are related to the strong interactions. And of course, in this picture, we see the Higgs boson, that is a new type of particle, neither nor, and it's, as we will see, a fundamental particle to understand our microscopic world. Why it is that way? Okay, so all these particles, now we can say also the Higgs boson, have been produced in the laboratory at different places in the world. For example, in Fermilab, where I worked, they discovered the bottom quark, the top quark, and the tau neutrino. In other places, other particles. And what is important to observe is that they have very different masses, okay? If we think of a proton, the mass of a proton is 1 GeV, okay? So if we think about the proton, for example, the top quark is the heaviest of all particles of this picture and weighs about 172 times the mass of the proton, okay? But they are very different, and you can see, for example, the ratio between the electron that is here and the top quark mass is a factor 10 to the 5. So there's a huge hierarchy, okay? And the neutrinos are of the order of 10 to the minus 12 electron volts or so. So the question is, why is the Higgs important? And it's related to what causes this particle to have masses, okay? If these particles wouldn't have mass, would not have mass the way they do, then they will actually propagate at the speed of light, and the universe, the way we see, would not be possible. So although the Higgs, I will not go into that, only is responsible for the masses of these particles, and these particles only make up about 1% of the visible mass, is a very important 1% because it makes possible the universe the way we see it. Okay? So what is really the Higgs field? Well, the Higgs field, so we are going to make a distinction between the Higgs field and the Higgs boson. The Higgs field is a field of energy that permeates all the space and, in fact, is an invisible force field. What is an invisible force field? Well, we know one very much. We are very acquainted with the Earth magnetic field. The Earth magnetic field is also an invisible force field. It is sourced by the Earth. It permeates the space nearby, and it has a direction that is defined by the way the Earth spins around its own axis. So we know this invisible force field, the Earth magnetic field, and the way we know it is there is we just have to take a compass and we will know that the Earth magnetic field is there, correct? Well, the Higgs field is a bit different. You can see it here, okay? So I hope you're seeing it. So the Higgs field, first of all, is sourced by itself, and I will go back into it. It permeates the whole universe. It has no special direction, and the only way I know that the Higgs field exists is because I know particles get mass. Okay? That's my proof that the Higgs field exists. Of course, the Higgs field, as a byproduct of the Higgs field, as I will try to explain in a moment, comes the Higgs boson. So when the Higgs boson was discovered at the Large Hadron Collider in Geneva, Switzerland, about 2012, so more than 4 years ago, it was a proof of the existence of the Higgs field. Because so far, we know the particles had masses, but we did not know if really the Higgs field was the answer, correct, as usual in science. Okay, so the point is, this is a bit of a complex concept, but I would like to take a few minutes to explain it to you. And it's interesting because, first of all, it's a beautiful example of cross-fertilization between different fields, the field of particle physics and the field of condensed matter. So the question is, what turns this Higgs field on? What makes it be, correct? Well, what happens is that what we see here is that the Higgs field, many force fields like the electromagnetic and the like the magnetic and the electric field, they have a potential energy, and this potential energy in the vacuum, in the absence of charges, happens to be zero. Okay, is at the minimum of the potential energy vanishes. Okay, in the case of the Higgs field, well now. The vacuum is a quantum vacuum, and this is the medium where it propagates. And what we will see is that the potential energy of the Higgs field is such that is non-zero, that the minimum of the potential energy of the Higgs field is non-zero. What this means is that there is the process of what we call a spontaneous symmetry breaking, and which means that we have a system, that is the one where we power the Higgs field, that has a given symmetry, and I will go to that, but is not respected by the ground state. So the ground state is non-zero. And the Higgs acquire what we call a vacuum expectation value, that is non-zero. So the fact that there is a symmetry of the system that is not respected by the ground state is what we call the process of a spontaneous symmetry breaking. Okay? So this is an idea that is not very common. But in reality, it's an idea that happens in many systems in condensed matter, for example, antiferromagnets or crystals, or also in BCS superconductors. There is always a spontaneous breakdown of a given symmetry. And the problem is that the spontaneous breakdown of the given symmetry, Mr. Goldstone, with his mathematical theorem, says that whenever there is a spontaneous symmetry breaking, there should be massless particles associated at that degrees of freedom of the spontaneous symmetry breaking. Okay? So the question is, if we have this Higgs field that has a non-zero vacuum expectation value, this means that we have a spontaneous symmetry breaking, where are the massless fields associated to this idea? Correct? If they are massless fields, we should be able to see them some, in some way. So this is a problem, and Nambu thought about this in his Nobel lecture, says a spontaneous symmetry breaking is the one that defined this idea of spontaneous symmetry breaking, is a case of cross-fertilization because it's applying condensed matter ideas to particle physics. And the whole solution to giving mass to the particles in the standard model is really the same concept, as I will try to explain you, as the BCS, the Bardeen, Cooper and Schrieffer superconductors that we know from condensed matter. It's the same concept. So what happens? So in all these cases, we have a broken symmetry, and we have these Goldstone modes, these massless modes. There should be one per broken generator of the symmetry, that in these cases are the spin waves, the acoustic phonons. But for superconductors, this Goldstone mode is missing. And for the Higgs in the standard model, also happens that the Goldstone modes are missing. Okay? So, going more carefully on what happens, okay? So this potential, the Higgs field now, has a potential that describes, that is this equation here, that describes the energetics of turning on the Higgs field. So what I was telling you before, okay? So the Higgs, what turns on the Higgs field is this process of spontaneous symmetry breaking, but this spontaneous symmetry breaking is triggered by the self-interactions of this Higgs with itself, as I was saying, is self-source, okay? The Higgs field doesn't need to react to interact with anything else. It's just by the own interactions, this quartic coupling of the Higgs field. So the scalar field self-interactions are such that instead of favoring the Higgs field to be at this zero value of the potential, they favor the Higgs field to be away from a zero value. So they call a vacuum expectation value that is some certain complex vacuum expectation value that is non-zero, no? Where zero is here. So the idea is that because there is this symmetry, okay, in principle we see that there should be this degenerate vacua. Okay? But if you think about that, many people think, okay, when there are degenerate vacua, that means I can have a spontaneous symmetry breaking and create my ghost of bosons. Well, if you think about quantum mechanics, and you think about the double well Higgs potential, this has a C2 symmetry, okay? However, the symmetries that you get in the system are such that what happens is that the vacuum expectation value is a combination of the two minimum that we have in the double well potential. So in fact, what means that the vacuum in the double well potential is such that it respects the symmetries of the system. So the big difference here is I have a system, I can say that the system has a given symmetry, and I want to know if the vacuum, the lower energy solution of that system, respects the symmetry or not. Okay? And the difference between quantum mechanics and quantum field theory is that quantum field theory is a system of many bodies. Okay? And that's why when we have this degenerate potential and I pick to be in one of these solutions here, it costs me infinite energy to move from here to another solution around this throat here. Okay? And so this was observed by Anderson, okay, the one of the fathers of this idea, that spontaneous symmetry breaking is a property of large systems. Okay, so it's very difficult to go from here to here. However, there are small excitations around this minimum that correspond to locally deforming along this valley, and those are the massless Goldstone bosons. So far, we understood the concept of spontaneous symmetry breaking, okay? But we also understand that if we have the concept of spontaneous symmetry breaking, we should be seeing these massless particles. So the problem that these gentlemen were facing is that they were understanding everything in condensed matter, they were trying to transform it to particle physics, and they were missing the Goldstone bosons the massless Goldstone bosons. So that was the big problem that Nambu and Anderson and Goldstone had at that moment. Okay. So the Higgs mechanism, so these gentlemen, as I said, were very puzzled by the fact that they didn't understand what happened with these Goldstone modes. And then it was mainly Anderson that thought that, okay, what happens is that if you have a system that instead to be a spontaneous global symmetry actually has a local symmetry or a gauge symmetry, then there are some degrees of freedom, gauge fields, that are associated to this extra gauge symmetry, extra local symmetry. And what happens is that when a spontaneous symmetry breaking occurs, the Goldstone modes actually are given the extra degree of freedom to the gauge bosons and make them massive. Okay? And this is the way that the Higgs field gives mass to the W and Z gauge bosons that are the force carriers of electroweak of the weak interactions. Okay? This is very important, of course, because this is the definition of how we really understand electroweak symmetry breaking. And in fact, if you think about this is actually the Peter Higgs discovery paper. The purpose of the present notes is to report that the spin one quanta of some of the gauge fields acquire mass, and this phenomenon, he says, is the relativistic analog of the plasmon phenomenon to which Anderson was drawing attention. So if you think in a superconductor, okay, what happens is that because of the phononic excitations, Cooper pairs are formed, so they are formed condensates of electrons and positrons. These electrons and positrons break the symmetry, okay? They break the symmetry, and by that way, in fact, if you think they break the quantum electrodynamic symmetry inside the superconductor, and that means that the photons inside the superconductor acquire mass. Okay, the photons that are usually quantums without mass become massive, are the plasmons inside the superconductor. And this is why you explain the Meissner effect of this magnetic levitation, okay? Because the superconductor, because of these photons that acquire mass, they don't let enter the magnetic field inside the superconductor, and that produces this magnetic levitation. And what happens then is that the Goldstone bosons are not there, because they are transformed in the longitudinal component of this photon inside the superconductor that actually becomes massive. Okay, so this is exactly the same explanation. The Higgs field and a spontaneous symmetry breaking in particle physics has exactly the same explanation that the theory of superconductivity in solid-state physics. Okay, so this is an amazing situation where really two fields are explaining the same effect. Okay, so this was the real explanation for those of you that maybe have been thinking about these issues, especially the relation between superconductivity and the Higgs mechanism. So now, what happens then is that this mechanism that actually is called the Braut, Englert and Higgs mechanism. These two guys got the Nobel Prize. Unfortunately, this guy died before. This idea was thought of, and the idea of the Higgs boson was thought of basically 50 years ago. And the idea is that there is a fundamental scalar field with self-interactions, okay, that is the source of itself, okay, that can cause a spontaneous symmetry breaking in the vacuum. And respect the sophisticated choreography of the gauge symmetries of the universe and can give mass to the gauge bosons. And so you see this scalar field has 4 degrees of freedom. 3 of these degrees of freedom are kind of eaten to give the longitudinal component of the gauge bosons that therefore become massive. And the 4th degree of freedom is left as a fundamental particle and is the Higgs boson. And in that sense, what we say is that the Higgs boson is the leftover of the Higgs mechanism, of the mechanism of a spontaneous symmetry breaking that give mass to the fundamental gauge bosons. Okay? I thought it was very interesting. I was very, very lucky here to be with Mr. Higgs at the Nobel Prize ceremony. And he was explaining to me something that I always try to tell to younger people, that he said the first paper he published it alone, these two guys worked together, was actually rejected by peer review journals because his peers thought that it was totally irrelevant for the real world. Okay, so this is to tell young people, don't get disencouraged. Sometimes it's very hard to even communicate with your peers the relevance of your findings. Okay, so of course, I only told you, if I go backwards very fast, I only told you how these two guys acquire mass. These two guys should acquire mass because have to do with the weak interactions that has a finite propagation length. And so I told you how the Higgs give mass to these guys. These guys, which are spin one bosons, acquire mass by, they have two transversal, well, this has is a charge, so it's double, but two transversal and one longitudinal component. And the longitudinal component comes from one of the degrees of freedom of this Higgs field. And then we are left with this Higgs boson. The second part of the puzzle is how this Higgs now can give mass to all these fermions. And this was what is a standard model of particle physics. Weinberg-Salam thought about how there are some type of Yukawa interactions that connect this Higgs field with the fermions. And when, because in the standard model, the fermions are, the left and right hand, the fermions are different. And a mass term is the marriage of a left and a right-handed fermion. You need the Higgs, in reality, to marry the left and right-handed fermions in a way that respects the gauge invariance of the theory. So the Higgs, when acquires a vacuum expectation value, gives a mass to these fermions through the Yukawa interactions. And so it was in 1967 that already this gentleman, together with the Higgs mechanism, proposed the electroweak theory for the standard model. Of course, this was all very beautiful, but we did not have a confirmation at that time that this mechanism, this idea, was the right idea to explain why particles have mass and do not propagate at the speed of light. Okay? So what happens is then we have an SU2 cross U1 non-abelian gauge theory with chiral fermions. It's broken to the U1 electromagnetic by the Higgs field acquiring non-zero vacuum expectation value. The three of the four Higgs components, the Goldstone bosons, are eaten to give mass to the W and the C, and they leave a one neutral Higgs boson and a massless photon. And this is what explains the world the way it is. Okay? Of course, then the Higgs also coupled to the fermions, and of course, the heavier particles interact more with the Higgs. So the strength of the interaction with the Higgs defined while the top is much heavier than the electron, 10 to the 5 orders of magnitude heavier. Okay? Because the strength of the coupling of the electron with the Higgs is much weaker than the one of the top quark. Of course, that is one question that we still do not know. Why is that difference? But we do know how the fermions acquire mass. So this is all a great story, but I could be telling you the same story about things that we have not found yet, okay? But the point is that, again, that is a good example for younger people and maybe for not so younger either, that it took 50 years to prove this idea, okay? So half a century after the Higgs boson idea comes its discovery at the Large Hadron Collider. The Large Hadron Collider is a proton-proton accelerator that collides beams of proton against beams of proton. Remember, the protons are made by three quarks and, that are glued inside the proton by the gluons. And so the idea is that we accelerate these proton-proton collisions. The protons are accelerated at velocities very close to the speed of light, and they collide, and in such a way that we create the conditions or the energy that is very close to instants after the Big Bang. And the idea is that if we go to instance after the Big Bang, we will be able to recreate particles, okay, that were at that moment present but are not present now. So we detect the Higgs boson by creating the Higgs boson at the Large Hadron Collider, and we create the Higgs boson at the Large Hadron Collider by putting conditions that are very close to instance after the Big Bang. Okay? And so this is what, so this is a 17 mile long vacuum pipe, 300 feet below ground, sorry. And let me, I hope it works. So this is LHC. At this moment is going at 6.5 against 6.5. So you see here, these are the protons, start being accelerated at the speed of light. They keep going into this beam pipe. They cross the French-Swiss border, no passport required. This is the proton. These are the three quarks inside the proton. And of course, we have to, you know, we have to bend them and accelerate it with electromagnetic fields, with superconducting magnets. Now they go inside the huge detector. This is ATLAS. They collide at very high energies, and kaboom, they recreate a lot of particles. And among those particles, they recreate the Higgs particle that here is observed because among all this debris, okay, so you can imagine how difficult it is to recognize. So these are two Higgses. One is going to two electrons, and one is going to two muons of these original particles. The Higgs actually decays in 10 to the minus 24 seconds. So it leaves, actually, it leaves a bit more, 100 yoctoseconds. A yoctosecond is 10 to the minus 24 seconds. My husband said, don't say yoctoseconds. No one knows what that is. Probably he's right. Anyway, the point is that we create the Higgs boson. We create many of them till we were really convinced that we have seen it. Okay, but the Higgs boson immediately transform into something that are these original, these particles that we can see. We are made from electrons and up and down quarks, basically. Okay? All the other particles leave very little and transform into other things. But these huge detectors that I have here, this is the ATLAS detector, and this is the CMS detector. The ATLAS detector is six-story high, as heavy as the Eiffel Tower. The CMS detector is the little one, is twice as heavy, but so it's chubby, but it's smaller, okay? And you can imagine, I mean, the theories, when I go there, I can't believe this works. But maybe some other people, like Pierre, you cannot believe that it works either. Maybe it's all an imagination. we need some funding, so, you know. So the truth is that this is amazing. I mean, the Large Hadron Collider is the most expensive, most imaginative, and highest technology machine ever built by mankind, surpassing going to the moon and going anywhere in space. Okay, just to really be, I mean, you have to be able to detect there are millions of collisions produced, millions of debris, and we have to be able to recognize among all that junk, so to say, the fact that we have produced a Higgs particle that then we reconstruct, or two Higgs particles, depending. In this case, it's a Higgs particle that goes into two Z bosons, and each of the Z bosons go one of them to two muons and one to two electrons. And we reconstruct all that. I will go to that in a second, correct? So this is amazing. Also amazing is that this is the most international collaboration you can ever think. I mean, about 40 countries work in these collaborations, 3,000 physicists per collaboration, and about 200 institutions. So it's a huge complex object with cutting-edge technology that take pictures of collision, 20 million pictures per second in three dimensions. A bit more than your iPhone. So, of course, among these 40 countries, Canada, there are 10 Canadian institutions in ATLAS that have played a leading role in the Higgs discovery. And I was very jealous to see that you guys have 7 people working in ATLAS. In U Chicago, there are much less. So, if you want to look at this, you have all what Canada has done, ATLAS Canada, and so this discovery has been really the hard work of many countries and many institutions and thousands of people. That's why it took 50 years, plus the fact that it cost $10 billion plus an extra for the detectors. What produced the Higgs, correct? So you'd think the Higgs is more heavy, is, sorry, the Higgs we have seen, we have proven that it weighs like 125 times the mass of the proton, much heavier than the proton. We have the protons, which accelerate, the protons at very high energy, okay? They collide almost at the speed of light. And I was telling that to someone today, and I think it's good to remind yourself, that this is quantum field theory, which is not the same as our usual world. Because if you collide two cars at high speed in the highway, you expect to produce all the debris of the two cars. What we are doing here is we collide two cars and we produce a truck that then transform into four motorcycles. So really, really, that's the idea, okay? That's the idea. So, but what is important here? The important is that the vacuum, okay, the nothingness, is the most important thing in the universe, and we didn't realize that, okay? Because what happens, what we say, is that, you know, in the vacuum, where we think is nothing, because of quantum fluctuation, Heisenberg principle, okay, we are generating particles, variations in mass, and we are generating what we call virtual particles, which means with masses that are not precisely, so the top quark is 175 times the mass of, or 172 times the mass of the proton, but with masses, by the uncertainty principle, there is uncertainty in the mass, we are generating in the vacuum, okay, virtual top quarks. And then the Higgs connects very strongly, because the strength of the Higgs connection to the top is very strong because the top is so heavy, connects to the top, to the virtual tops in the vacuum, and decays into photons. And this is one of the processes that we detect, the Higgs going into two photons, into two beams of light. Okay? And this happened because of the nothingness of the vacuum, because of the quantum fluctuations, and the fact that the Higgs talks to the top quarks very much, very strong. Okay, so similarly, this is one important decay mode, Higgs to diphotons. The other, the production is, these are the quarks, the protons, with all the quarks and the gluons and all that. And from all that, I take two gluons, and again, quantum fluctuations create top quarks and bottom quarks that then create the Higgs. And then the Higgs decays into virtual Zs that finally go into, for example, two muons and two electrons. Okay, so quantum fluctuations can produce the Higgs at LHC, quantum fluctuations of that vacuum. Okay, so I think it's amazing. It's when I'm trying to tell, you know, the idea when one realizes about, you know, quantum field theory and what it means, I think is maybe for us everyday life, but it's not something that everyday life tells you about. So, of course, the Higgs can decay into many particles, decays into bottom quarks, into Ws. This is a function of the mass. The Higgs have been measured to be around here, 125 GeV. The case to photons, so this is the branch ratio. This is how much it decays into photons. It decays much less into photons than to bottons, but the fact that it's much easier to see the photons is because, of course, as I told you, you not only generate the Higgs, you generate the Higgs many more particles and debris and things. So you need to be able to find the Higgs in these huge background of other junk, okay, or other, so one in a million, okay, let's say. So the main decay modes, as we will see, discovery modes, are actually these two, because are, we say, the cleanest, okay? But of course we are looking at the Higgs, because we have to prove that the Higgs talks to all these guys in order to be sure that it gives mass to all these guys. So the Higgs discovery at LHC, for example, this is what we saw. This was the big thing, correct? A narrow mass peak with two isolated high PT photons, okay? Many of these finally construct this little bump over the smooth falling background of all the standard model debris, okay? And the other thing here is going to four leptons, as I showed you at the beginning, two electrons and two muons. Again, here, this is the Higgs, okay, 125 GeV, that is reconstructing the Higgs going to two Cs, and the Cs decay into two electrons and two muons, for example. So these are the 1 million dollar plots, or 1 billion dollar plots, I guess, of the discovery of the Higgs. Okay? So, no doubt that we have discovered a Higgs, that's the problem, the grammar is the problem. Okay, so what does it mean? This means that, you know, if it is one, would be precisely what we expect within the standard model of Mr. Peter Higgs and company, okay? But the measurements are not perfect. Of course, we have, you know, we need to make many, many hundred thousand of measurements to be sure that we have a good measurement with little error. So we can see, for example, what are the Atlas EMS and the combined values with the errors of the Higgs being produced and finally decaying to photons, being produced and finally decaying to Cs, being produced and finally decaying to Ws, to Taus, and to Bs. These are all the modes that we are looking for. And as you see, they are not all of them on top of the number one. That would be exactly what we expect to explain the standard model Higgs. What this means is that this Higgs could be, or is, almost something that is the standard model Higgs, but could be that there is something more hidden there. So like detectives, really, we need to find out if this is the Higgs or some Higgs. And some Higgs could also do the job of giving masses to the particles, but could also have some other properties because it's like, you know, it's like someone that is doing its job, but, you know, in the evenings does another little job as well, okay? So what kind of Higgs, okay? So we want to quantify its standard model likeness. How much is the guy, okay, or the girl? So what kind of Higgs? Well, it may be that there are more than one Higgs. You know, all the other particles, the quarks, they come in many, correct? So why should the Higgs be just the one single type of particle of this type? So it can be a mixture of more than one Higgs. And inside, most theories will say that the standard model only have one Higgs. But if you think about some other ideas beyond the standard model, there would be more Higgses. So could be an elementary particle, as all the particles that we know from the standard model that is not made from anything else, but it's just elementary, or could be composite of some other things, correct? We don't know yet. So, for example, could have, you know, these couplings to the photon, okay, and to the gluons, well, could be a bit enhanced or a bit suppressed with respect to the standard model, okay? Could be that it couples to the matter particles, but has not 100% coupling that is proportional to the mass of the particles. So what all this says is that these things that are not sitting in front of one with zero error, which is very hard to achieve, tells me that there is room for all these things to be true. Okay? And as a scientist, I have to ask, what is the situation? Okay? So, of course, okay, the goal of the current LHC, we are planning to run the LHC to 2035. So what are we doing at the LHC with 2035, besides not being jobless? So, and having invest a lot of money, so we have to show that we are good. So, the main thing is to answer all these questions, which are not easy questions to answer, okay? And also search for something new, something that we didn't expect. Why we should be thinking that there is something new? Why are we not really happy with the Higgs? Okay. Well, or the other way to say it, are we done? And it's not really, not yet. Why not? We know that there is dark matter, and I will go back to that. We don't have a clue what it is, but we know that the standard model does not explain dark matter. So to explain dark matter, we need something else. We know, because we are here rather than not, that there is more matter than antimatter in the universe, okay? Because if matter and antimatter get together, they annihilate and will be just radiation. At some point in the history of the universe, there was an imbalance between matter and antimatter, and matter won, and here we are, okay? What we call matter or antimatter doesn't matter, but
one of the things. You can call yourself matter or antimatter, but we are all the same. That's important. So, also, I told you, we don't have a clue why the mass of the top is so much heavier than the mass of the electron, or even the neutrinos that are super, super tiny masses, okay? So, this doesn't explain the hierarchy of masses. This sort of only explains why the masses are the way, why we can get masses, okay? But not the value of the masses. The value of the masses, we are fitting to what we measure. So this, oh, sorry. Oh, no. Oh, God, this is terrible. Okay, so bad. Baryogenesis need new sources of CP violation, which we are trying to understand in different sectors. And also the tiny neutrino masses, I won't have the time to say much about it, but the neutrino, with these tiny masses, may be the only particles whose masses are not only coming from the Higgs, but from some other new physics at some high energy. Okay? So, the Higgs is special, but in reality, all the things here are things we need to answer. But none of these questions demands that there is new physics at the scale of the LHC. So, we could be cooked there. Okay? So we need, these questions need an answer, but we don't know if the answer would be at the scale, at the energies that we can explore with LHC. So the problem, however, or what it makes us think that something should be at LHC, better be, okay? So is that the Higgs is special because it's an scalar, and what happens is that the scalars have their masses or their vacuum expectation value that is not protected for gauge symmetries and means that quantum corrections can change the Higgs mass parameter and the Higgs mass from being 125 times the mass of the proton to be 10 to the 15 times the mass of the proton. Okay? If I have particles that are of order 10 to the 10 or the Planck mass, and these particles talk to the Higgs, they will actually change this mass parameter in the Lagrange, in the potential. In the Lagrangian, okay? So this is important. These are what I get, these radiative corrections. So it means that basically the Higgs in the standard model, the Higgs makes the standard model a good, nice, polite, consistent theory from the point of view of calculations. But if there is anything, any other heavy states that talk to the Higgs is somehow like grand unification, a string, Planck, or anything below that, this will destabilize the mass of the Higgs through radiative corrections. And this, of course, is a problem, because then we say, well, we have to tune things in things like 10 to the 10 or so in order to have two quantities that are of order 10 to the 10 to give me something that is 100 GeV instead of 10 to the 10 GeV, correct? So this is what is called the naturalness problem or the fine-tuning problem, okay? The existence of other guys, okay, will actually very much affect the mass of the Higgs. Okay? Solutions. Oh my God. Okay, solutions. Supersymmetry. Supersymmetry is an extended symmetry of nature that says that for every fermion we have in the standard model, we need to have a boson. For every boson that we have in the standard model, we need to have a fermion. So it's a fermion-boson symmetry. Okay? And is such that, of course, the first thing it does, it doubles, at least it doubles the particles of the standard model. Okay? If we want to be positive, we have discovered half of the particles of the supersymmetric spectrum because we already discovered all of the standard model. But we need still to discover the other half. So, if supersymmetry would be a perfect symmetry, the mass of the electron and the mass of the supersymmetric partner of the electron should be the same. And the couplings to the Higgs, for example, should be the same. Okay? If that would be the case, these radiative corrections that I was trying to show you here, this would be zero, because they will cancel out. And that would solve my hierarchy problem. Okay? There are other solutions that are called the fact that this, in this case, in supersymmetry, the Higgs is an elementary particle, and its mass is protected by the symmetry. Okay? But there could be other solutions where the Higgs is actually a composite object. And this is where we are going to talk about the ideas of extra dimensions. Okay? So the Higgs does not exist about a certain scale, okay? And so at some certain scale, there is a new a strong dynamic that, like QCD, but a higher scale, that comes and changes the way that things work, okay? And there are many other particles here. There are many other particles. Here are also many other particles. Here I will not talk about because it's too much. But all these two options, forget this for the moment, supersymmetry and composite Higgs, this is an elementary Higgs solution. This is a composite Higgs. And both of them can solve, provide solutions to the fine-tuning problem. But both solutions will make me go back to measuring these properties of the Higgs I have seen and see that they are different from what I expected. So the idea is that at LHC, I will discover new particles in supersymmetry or in this composite Higgs, and I also will see that these precision measurements that I did from the Higgs coupling to bottoms and to quarks and to Ws and to Cs will not fit precisely. Okay? So this means that these things will not go to the align of one. And the idea is how to be able to prove these theories by doing precision measurements of the Higgs and by discovering new particles that are different in each theory. So it's a big challenge, correct? Because we are the same as in the Higgs time. It took Mr. Higgs 50 years. Maybe it takes us 200 years to understand what is there. But that's the nature of the beast when you do research, correct? So anyway, so as I said, unfortunately, I lost that. So you don't know which team is stronger. The Montreal Composites or the Toronto Susie Leaves. I should have put my own picture here with a Toronto Maple Leaf T-shirt that Nigel Lockyer made me buy when I was coming here in NSERC in 2004. But I forgot. I remember that in the airplane today. That would have been so good. But okay. In any way, in SUSY, important, these three guys are important because in SUSY, at least you need to have another three gauge bosons. Okay? In these composite models, who knows? It's hard to tell. Could be one, could be many. You never know that. Okay. So both teams have their strengths and maybe weaknesses. And we need to find out who is the winner, but probably will take more than that. So, first of all, we go to the home team. So the SUSY has many good properties. I will not go over all of them. But, for example, as I said, SUSY allows, if it is perfect, allows for unification of gauge cap, allows for stabilizing this difference between the Planck mass and the fact that the Higgs mass is so small. Also, I kind of trick you because in the potential of the Higgs, I put the mass parameter with a minus m squared. Okay? If I should have put plus m squared, the minimum would be at zero, and the spontaneous symmetry breaking will not occur. So in the standard model, I put by hand the spontaneous symmetry breaking by picking the mass m squared with a minus sign in front. In supersymmetry, no matter what I do, radiative corrections get me this minus sign. So that's a nice thing. That is what is said. Oh God. I'm doing whatever. So allows coupling unification. That is a nice feature. Provides a good dark matter particle. The lightest supersymmetric particle can be a particle for dark matter. Allows for explaining the matter-antimatter asymmetry in the universe, not in the simplest models, but allows to do that, at the electroweak scale. What is interesting is if I can explain the matter-antimatter asymmetry at the electroweak scale, I can go and measure its signatures at the electroweak scale in collider experiments. And, as I said, there is an extended Higgs sector. So this is the standard model particles, okay? We need to have another Higgs doublet with another 4 degrees of freedom. And these are the supersymmetric partners that have this tilde, which means these are all fermions, which are quarks and sleptons, and they are all bosonic partners. And these instead are fermionic partners that are the super partners of all the gauge bosons. And then the Higgs has the Higgsino. So this is Fotino, Gaugino, Sino, Wino, Higgsino, Higgsino, and so on. They are funny, but not bad. Anyway, so what happened? I told you that if Susie were perfect in nature, all these guys would have the same mass of these guys. If that would have happened, I would have seen these guys, or many of these guys already, at the collider experiments around the world. So we know that if Susie is a good symmetry, it should be at least broken at some level. And we say it should be softly broken, which means that we change the values of this mass with respect to this mass are different, but the couplings of these guys with the Higgs and these guys are the same. So this is softly Susie breaking. And so what matters here is we are looking for these Higgs particles, these Susie particles at LHC. But if we think, you know, people start saying, maybe you heard, okay, you know, Susie is becoming unnatural because now what happens is we have not discovered the Susie particles at the TeV range at LHC or at a few hundred GeV. Well, not all, as in society, not all Susie particles are the same. Some are more important than others, okay? And in particular, there is what is, to this variation in this mass, there is this Susie scale of breaking, but the Susie scale of breaking, what really matters for the naturalness problem are just gluinos, stops, and Higgsinos. This is a Higgsino. So if we want naturalness, so if we want to solve this hierarchy problem in a comfortable way, we could expect that these particles, at least, and not the others, are at the reach of the LHC. And I will not go into a lot of details here, but I just want to tell you that when I say, well, we are getting nervous because we have not seen stops or gluinos or Higgsinos at LHC. Higgsinos, okay, which are the superpartners of the Higgs, are super hard to produce. And the limits on Higgsinos at LHC are around 150 to 200 GeV. Not even, because in reality the bounds that are put are for some mixtures of these particles. What happens is that these guys, these guys and these guys mix at a given level. And so we have what is called the Charginos and the Neutralinos. Okay? So far, I would like to explain only this, that these are the issues that we would like to see some of these particles at LHC. And if you look at the bounds we have now, okay, for stops, this is stops as a function of the dark matter candidate. Well, if the dark matter candidate is about 300 times the mass of the proton, every value of the stop mass is allowed. Okay, the gluinos are putting some constraints here, but again, these constraints in some way happen to be for some simplified models, and nature could be a bit more complicated. And as far as the Higgsino goes, these are many of the bounds, but really the bounds of the Higgsinos are in this very low region of the space, where again, the neutralino, the lightest supersymmetry particle, is below 100 GeV. So I'm not saying that it's not, you know, we would like to see these particles already at LHC. Yes, of course, would be delightful to see them. Obviously, discover supersymmetry would be the discovery, the second discovery of the center after the Higgs for particle physics. But it's not that what we have seen, well, maybe we are looking basically under the lamppost, and we should be looking in some other places. So I will not go into this. So now, as I said, the only thing we have at LHC is the Higgs, correct? That we have discovered. So the Higgs measures of, weights 125 times the mass of the proton and has some properties interacting with the other particles, as I showed to you. So this means what we can learn from these Higgs, okay? Because this we know is one thing we know we have. So what we can learn are different things. So this is the 125 GeV Higgs, or mass of the proton Higgs, this red line. And then if you have only the standard model, nothing else, okay, there is something that is a bit could make us nervous, although there is no reason for that, is that because of the value of the Higgs mass and of the value of the top mass, it happens that the vacuum in which we live is actually metastable. It's not the deepest vacuum. And eventually we could tunnel to the other vacuum, and of course we would cease to exist. That is not very relaxing thought, okay? And many people, of course, have written many blogs and tweets and so on about it. But in reality, if you do the calculation of how long it will take to quantum tunnel to the ROM vacuum, it will be 10 to the 100 years. So your grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren are okay. So, however, we don't like this solution for the reasons I told you, because I want to have dark matter, I want to have an explanation of the dynamical generation of masses, I want to understand matter-antimatter asymmetry, and none of them can be explained if I am sitting here. In supersymmetry, the minimal extension is I get the standard model and I double the particles, okay? But I could have the standard model, double the particles, and being generous, also put some extra particles there, okay? And then, of course, is these composite Higgses that I will talk now. These composite Higgses, again, they are fitting with the 125 GeV Higgs, but they can be all over the place. So these are the solutions that we were discussing that would be interesting to look at, and we want to understand if, given that the Higgs has been measured, if now we can measure the properties of these Higgs to see if we are here or here, and to see in which branch of model building of composite Higgses or in which branch of model building of supersymmetry we are. Okay? So for supersymmetry, in reality, what is interesting is that the SUSY, as I said, predicts four kinds of Higgs bosons. We have discovered one of them. We have another three, one CP even, one CP odd, and one char Higgs, in the minimal model. We could also have some other models where, as I said, we have some extra singlet scalar, and then we supersymmetrize that, and there would be more Higgses. But the minimal amount of Higgses in supersymmetry is that. If not, you don't have supersymmetry. Okay? Of course, where are those Higgses is a different question. They could be at 10 TeV, and we don't see it. So that's the problem. Okay? In fact, the Higgs mass is related to the mass of the Z boson in supersymmetry for the supersymmetric symmetry. And so at three level, before radiative corrections, before the Higgs talks to the top and to other particles and the stops, the mass of the Higgs should be below 91 GeV. Well, we know that that's not true because the Higgs is 125. But in supersymmetry, we have the Higgs, as we said, talks to the top and to the partners of the top, and this gives quantum corrections. So having the Higgs mass 125 GeV tells us a lot about the stop sector and how the stop sector in supersymmetry should be. Okay, so we have the lamppost, a Higgs 125 GeV, and how it talks to the particles we know. And then we go and ask how this fit in supersymmetry. Okay? It turns out that it's very interesting. The time is not good, no? How much you think I should?
Minus
10. Minus 10, you said? Oh, my God. Okay. Okay. This is the time when I forget the slides and I talk to you. Okay, so supersymmetry. I'm not going to go into full details. I will just tell you, okay, that the fact that the Higgs is 125 GeV tell us a lot about where the stops could or could not be. We learn a lot about it. And doesn't matter the details. It depends on which extension of supersymmetry. We are trying to measure the couplings of supersymmetry the best way possible to understand where these other supersymmetric particles should be. And among the other supersymmetric particles are these three Higgses that we are looking for. Okay? So I will not tell you... Oh! Okay. You did that to me. This is terrible. This is... Don't send? What do you don't send? Send it. I'm very upset. This is the part when I start the talk again. This is... I'm sorry to tell you. No, I won't. Don't get so scared. But I will just try to say... I want to tell you a couple of a couple of ideas of extra, one idea of extra dimension, one idea of dark matter. My son told me, Mom, that's too long. And he is 15 years old. I should listen. No, okay. I don't know what happened. This is crazy. I don't know. It's crashing, my PDF. Okay. This is the... Okay, so I will try to tell you, I wanted really to at least tell you a little bit about a couple of things. So the ideas are different, correct? So from supersymmetry, we are trying to get this information about the other Higgses, and we are trying to get the information about the supersymmetric particles. And for that, we are really trying, I'm really trying to get this silly thing. Okay, at least I will tell you something. This is very funny. I need to tell Fermilab I need a new computer. That's clear, isn't it? Okay, at least I hope I will tell you. No. Okay. At least I want to tell you a couple of things. Well, this is not very nice. But okay, I lost the color, I lost a lot of things. But the point is, oh God, okay. Okay, so I will, this is a disaster, I don't know what happened. So what I want to tell you is, so supersymmetry, Higgs elementary, and other Higgses. At least this is the message I want you to have, correct? And in supersymmetry, you can search for dark matter, okay? The usual dark matter, the WIMP dark matter, is the weakly interacting particles that we are searching in experiments around the world. That in supersymmetry is something that we can search for, and although we are proving it much now, it's not excluded. Okay, there are also many other ideas. Many people in here at University of Toronto and so on are thinking about novel ideas of dark matter beyond supersymmetry. For example, dark photons, axions, and we have new experiments searching for that. Okay. The other idea is to have the Higgs as a composite. And I will just say a few words here. So the connection between, the models of electroweak symmetry breaking and a strong interaction means that the Higgs, the same as in QCD, we are thinking that we're generating a different scale, okay, by evolution of the by doing some spontaneous breakdown of the symmetry, like in QCD, by some strong dynamics that basically generates the electroweak symmetry breaking. But instead of generating it at the scale of lambda, the quantum chromodynamics, it will generate it with a new type of a strong interaction at the scale of electroweak symmetry breaking. And there where it comes, the idea of the connection between theories of strong dynamics and the existence of extra dimensions. So this is a picture of the extra dimensions, correct? This is the warp extra dimensions of Randall syndrome. This is the fifth dimension. And in reality, in this ADS-CFT correspondent that was there, what happens is that in four dimensions, the holographic description is such that this coordinate E has interpretation of being a renormalization scale in the four-dimensional theory. So we have a strong theory, a five-dimensional theory, this in ADS space with this metric, which is a very warp ADS space. With this is the curvature of the ADS space. So this is, so we're here in the UB brain, 4D UV brain, the energies are of the order of the Planck mass, and in the infrared brain, the energies are of the TV, of order of the electroweak scale. And what happens really is that the UV brain is a UV cutoff in the four-dimensional theory, and the infrared brain is an infrared cutoff of the four-dimensional theory. But the four-dimensional theory is a strong, is like QCD, it's a strong dynamic, and we need to use our knowledge about the five-dimensional theory, which basically is a way of being able to compute in a weakly coupled five-dimensional theory the results of the four-dimensional theory strongly coupled. So there is not much, unfortunately, I'm very unhappy with this, but okay. So what I want to say is that, so we generate then a scale here, okay? We generate a QCD scale from the strong coupling that set the mass scale for a tower or composite pions. So the idea in these composite Higgses is that the Higgs is, I don't know if, no, this is a disaster, okay. So the idea in these composite Higgses is that the Higgs is like a pion in QCD, okay? And so as such, there is a symmetry, and the Higgs is massless, okay? And when the strong dynamics is such that interact with a standard model particles, it creates a potential for the Higgs. And so in this strong dynamics, the Higgs is natural pseudo-Nambu-Goldstone boson that is naturally light, much lighter, and then the same as in QCD that you have the higher excitations, okay? Here you have also higher resonances that are the ones that are being searched for at LHC, like top primes and bottom primes and things with different charges. So we have a Higgs that is the one that we know, but that because it's composite will have, so everything that is in this brain, in the infrared brain, is composite, and that means it's composite because it means that at some low energy, this picture is not longer valid, and you have to go to a picture of more fundamental things. And everything that is in the UV brain, sorry, here, are elementary fields. So in the standard model in warp star dimensions, the Higgs field and the top quark are composite objects and live in this infrared brain, and the light electron, the light fermions, live in the UV brain. So these models are interesting because the Higgs is composite and will have very different couplings of the Higgs with the top and with the bottom and with the fermions of the standard model. And we are trying to measure that variation of couplings at LHC. And you can do a lot of model building that is not necessary to go now. But the idea basically is that with precision measurements of the Higgs boson at LHC, we will be able to understand if nature is more of a composite Higgs type of a scenario or is more of an elementary type of a scenario. Okay? At the same time, of course, we are going to look at the strong resonances of the composite models, and we are going to look at the supersymmetric partners of the supersymmetric theories. Sorry. I don't understand.
So that wasn't me killing the PowerPoint. Thank you. Questions? We have time for a couple of questions. People have to leave. They could leave like that.
Yes, please. If he doesn't boycott my presentation.
Well, we'll personally strangle him if he tries.
Yeah, I think that I was too overarching with what I wanted to tell, because when I start talking about the Higgs, I realized that it was important to explain. The extra dimensions, just to answer very shortly, of course, the point is that we don't know what our matter is, what I was going to show, correct? And I could come, of course, to show that. We don't know what our matter is, and we, in supersymmetry, for example, we think that some particles could play the role of the dark matter, and these particles talk to the Higgs. And in fact, we are starting with very deep underground experiments to prove what is called the Higgs portal. Okay, so there are regions. We know that dark matter interacts gravitational. That's really all what we know, correct? That for sure is that's the way we know there is dark matter. Okay, so gravitational lensing, but we don't know. We do know that it does not talk strongly to the Z boson, because if that would be the case, we should have the WIMP type, the weakly interacting particles. we should have seen them at the experiments deep underground, like, for example, well, here,
snow
no? Exactly, in Snow Lab. We should have seen them, correct? So we know that it doesn't talk to the Z. But now, we are now exactly having the sensitivity of these experiments, like a Snow Lab and in other places, to start probing if that matter talks to the Higgs. So we are probing what is called the Higgs portal, okay? And the other thing is, of course, that so if the Higgs is there, it could be connected to a whole dark sector, and the Higgs could be the only portal to that sector. So in supersymmetry, for example, we are probing now how the Higgs talks to dark matter, and we know that it's only the Higgs that is left as a possibility within supersymmetry to talk to dark matter, because other options have been excluded by experiments. But it could be more complex scenarios where there is a dark sector, not just a particle, but a whole, you know, a standard model, but dark sector with dark matter, and then the Higgs could be the only guy talking to both cases. It's not only the Higgs portal, was what I was trying to tell today. As I said, there are other possibilities. It's the dark photon portal, the axion portal, the neutrino portal. The Higgs portal was the one I was trying to tell you about today, and it's very exciting because we know the Higgs is there, and it's a very incredibly useful tool to explore dark sectors. Okay, so that's the Higgs with dark matter. The extra dimensions, the idea of the warp extra dimensions, as I was showing there, correct? The fact that you have this, the metric is such that you have these factors, or e to the minus KL, where KL is e to the minus 50, okay? So that the Planck in one brain, that is the UB brain, all masses are of order M Planck, 10 to the 19 GeV, and because of the warping, because of the geometry, all the masses in the infrared brain are of the order of the TV scale. And so the idea is, the idea of how to solve the hierarchy problem in extra dimensions is that the Higgs is living in this infrared brain. But living in the infrared brain, because it's this ADS-CFT correspondence, that this five-dimensional theory that I'm telling you about, this slice of five-dimensional theory, is really connecting with a different, a strongly coupled, four-dimensional theory in our world. Okay, and this is where the composite Higgs comes in, correct? So I can look at this five-dimensional theory in warp extra dimensions that I know how to do the calculations there, correct? And then I realize that the Higgs should be living in this infrared brain, and then I don't have this problem of why the Planck mass is so much bigger than the Higgs mass, because I understand that the answer to that is the warping of my five-dimensional world. Okay? And so, but at the same time, I know that everything that is in the infrared brain is a composite field. Everything that is in the ultraviolet brain is an elementary field. And the way to see that is because if you have a particle that is a good particle, that's the idea of elementary, up to very high energies, remember that I said this is like evolving from low energies at the infrared, high energies at the UV. So if my Higgs, correct, is a particle is at infrared, but then I know that this is composite, and the elementary particles should be the ones that are a good description of the theory up to very high energies. So all the light quarks, electrons, and so on, are going to have their wave function localized close to the UV brain, and all the heavy particles and the Higgs will have their wave functions localized close to the infrared brain. And in that scenario is what I'm talking about. There are two things that are interesting. One can construct models in which, one interesting thing you should tell me, you should ask me, Higgs went and put the Higgs field by hand, correct? In these extra dimensional models, these models of composite Higgs, you can actually have some enlarged symmetries in this bulk space, such that you generate the Higgs dynamically. You don't put it. It's part of your gauge, the symmetries in the bulk between the two. So that's interesting about extra dimensions. You generate the Higgs dynamically, and at the same time, the Higgs is a composite field, which is basically a pseudo-Nambu-Goldstone boson, which means that its mass is zero at a tree level, and only quantum corrections create the Higgs potential. And so these extra-dimensional models are a good way to see theories of a strong dynamics. The five-dimensional world explains the strongly coupled four-dimensional world. At the same time, composite Higgs and composite top are in this infrared brain. Elementary particles like the light leptons are in the UV brain, okay? And one can really explain dynamically without putting by hand the existence of the Higgs field, which before we just put it to solve the problem, right? But now we are getting it from the geometry of space. Sorry, this was in my slides. If I could have shown them, you would have seen it.
We're probably going to have to stop there, but let's thank Marcella.